You're listening to Gameplay with Matthew Cause on TSN 1050. Embrace the odds.
I want winners.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Gameplay. I'm your host, Matthew Cause. You are listening to TSN 1050. Gameplay on TSN 1050. Brought to you by FanDuel. Bet on all your favorite teams on the FanDuel Sportsbook app. A reminder, tonight, Latvia versus Canada. I guess not really tonight. Late afternoon. 5:30 pregame. Puck drop at 6 o'clock. Over-under is 8.5 goals. I am all over the I am all over the over on that. I am expecting just sloppy play all around. And then Thursday, it is Slovakia versus Canada. Friday, you got the Argonauts taking on the Hamilton Ticats, 7 o'clock pregame, 7:30 kickoff. So a whole lot going on, which is always fantastic, just having live events. And you go through kind of little dips here and there where those sort of go away because, hey, it is the summer. By the way, speaking of betting, someone bet $264,000 on the St. Louis Cardinals. They were taking on Colorado last night, and I get it. I totally get why that someone would have bet $264,000. Cards have 60 wins, lead the NL Central. Colorado, coming into last night, had 48 wins. They won 16-5. 16-5. So whoever bet that $264,000, I imagine they are rich enough to be able to handle it. And also, as I tell everyone, don't bet that kind of money. Getting back to the NFL, Tommy Jagai is joining us on the line. And you can follow his website at Steel Curtain on Twitter. You can follow him on Twitter at Tommy Jagai. That's J-A-G-G-I. And be sure to check out steelcurtain.com Tommy, by the way, thanks for joining the show. Let me start here. How many times does people go steel curtain instead of still curtain like I did?
It happens all the time. You are far from the first.
Yeah, like I saw it here in front of me. And also, by the way, I appreciate you coming on. We're doing a series where we are previewing every NFL team. So I appreciate you taking the time to join the show. And I'm like, oh, let me give a plug to the website. I'm staring at it, steelcurtain.com, and my brain still said, say steel.
Thank you for having me. It's no problem at all.
Yeah, let's start. And way before we started doing this, I always like to just sort of script out my favorite questions going into an NFL season. And one of them was just about Mike Tomlin. I'm just curious to see how he is and his approach to this year. Roethlisberger has been there since 2004. The longtime GM Kevin Colbert is gone. He's never had a losing season. I'm curious, what do you expect from Mike Tomlin, you know, next to Belichick, the most successful coach going in this game?
Yeah, I think we're looking at same old for Mike Tomlin. Like, he's not going to be fazed by anything. I know that the Steelers have undergone some changes, some big ones, too, and they have in the past.
Yeah.
But I think Tomlin's approaching this season the same way that he always has. He wants to be competitive. He wants to win. And I think that he's got something going there. He wants to keep that win streak alive. It means something to him, I think. And doubters always going to be on the Steelers again. Their odds are low to win the division, just like they were last year, and Steelers ended up 9-7-1. And so I think that Tomlin's kind of approaching this season like he always has, thinking that no matter who he has in terms of talent around him, he's going to be competitive.
And on FanDuel, the win total is at 7.5 is where Vegas has it marked. Actually, you know, Tommy, this is kind of interesting because do you think is management in line with the coach? Because sometimes the coach is just trying to win on Sunday. Management is often about what is next year and the year after. What do you think is more important for this organization? Regular season wins or trying to figure out who can be the next quarterback for this team long term?
Yeah, if you're asking me that question, I would be a little bit more future thinking when it comes to building the football program. But I know that that's really not Mike Tomlin's mentality. I think that the Steelers and the Rooney family kind of lines up with that. They want to sell tickets. They want to make money. They want to be competitive year after year. They have a reputation to uphold. And so sometimes I feel like the future does get neglected a little bit in some of their moves that they make in the draft and the offseason. I think they can be a little bit short-sighted in terms of some of the contracts they've given out in the past and adding on the voidable year money. But I do think that the goal, it does line up with the organization and Tomlin both, is we want to be competitive now. We want to win year after year, and we're not going to worry what happens in 2023, 2024, anything down the line.
Yeah, that's always one of the fun things is owner, GM, and coach all on the same line, and I can see how they can be different. Like, I understand for everyone wants to, you know, row the boat the same way, but we all still are human beings. We all have different motivations. You know, I've never thought about it until right now. That to me could be one of the more fascinating stories about this team. Speaking of the quarterbacks, you know, Mitch Trubisky gets a 2-year deal for $14 million. Mason Rudolph has been around for a while, and Cody Pickett was the first round draft pick. Who do you think starts in week one, and who do you think starts at the end of the season?
Yeah, it's a good question. In training camp, the competition has been fairly close up until lately. I think that job is ultimately going to go to Mitch Trubisky. He's been in the NFL the longest. He's actually not the oldest. Rudolph is slightly older, but Trubisky's been around the longest. Former second overall pick by the Chicago Bears. He had a really good preseason and training camp with the Buffalo Bills last year. And so far, it looks like he's starting to pull away from this quarterback competition a little bit, at least over the past few days of practice. And so I think Trubisky is the guy that ends up getting that job for the Steelers. I know that if it were to somehow be Mason Rudolph, Steelers fans would just lose their mind over that.
Oh, yeah. They'd go grab Myles Garrett's helmet and doink him over the head if it was that. But that's also the case for a lot of football fans. If you don't believe your team's got a legit chance to go deep in the playoffs, then you want to go with the high upside quarterback, and Mason Rudolph doesn't exactly represent that.
Yeah, that's right. And that's kind of where that future-minded mentality comes into play.
Yeah.
And it, for me at least, but not for the Steelers so much. And so I'm open to the idea of getting Kenny Pickett on the field early on in his career. He's already a 24-year-old rookie. I kind of don't want to delay the inevitable. They've already spent the 20th overall draft pick on him. We want to see what we have out of him. But I kind of think that if they roll with Trubisky, which looks like it's going to be the case, and he has the hot hand, I don't see them making that switch.
And by the way, apologies to Pickett. I called him earlier Cody Pickett, who was drafted in the seventh round back in 2004 and spent a little bit of time with the Toronto Argonauts. And I know the audience, everyone loves hot Cody Pickett versus Kenny Pickett talk. My apologies there. I am on this show. We often do, we often like to look at futures bets in the NFL. George Pickens, NFL Offensive Rookie of the Year at 25-1. I was wondering if you could tell people why it might not be the worst idea to throw down $5, $10 on that.
Yeah, I was at Steelers training camp last week, and what I can tell you is that George Pickens looks as good as he's being advertised right now. He really does. We're talking about a guy that's a 6'3 and a quarter receiver with flexible, smooth. I mean, he moves like a much smaller player, but his ability to just track the ball in the air and just make contort his body and make these miraculous catches just play after play, it blows my mind. And that's kind of what we saw back in Georgia. He was banged up his first couple seasons, but if you're looking for a bet to lay down on and it with some pretty good odds here, I would definitely throw some money at George Pickens, because that is a player who I can really see having a good year. If something were to happen to Deontay Johnson or Chase Claypool, he could be in line for a massive workload this season. And even without that, he might be able to leapfrog Claypool on the depth chart in terms of the amount of targets he can reel in this year. He's really, really looked impressive at Steelers training camp. And by most accounts that I've seen, he's been the best player there.
And it's one thing we know about Pittsburgh is this team knows how to draft and develop receivers. We're joined by Tommy Jagai. And again, go to stillcurtain.com. So going from stillcurtain.com to Steel Curtain, when you think about the Steelers, especially if you're a certain age, you always think of defense. It's defense, defense. And always it was defense and running. Even when Roethlisberger was putting up 4,800 yards, it's hard to get that stereotype out of your head, which makes last year so strange. Pittsburgh was dead last in rush defense, allowing over 146 yards a game, 5 yards a carry. I guess, what happened last year, and how can it be corrected?
Yeah, fortunately, I don't think what happened last year is going to be the trend again. I think it was a little bit of a fluky season and a number of things that didn't go their way. TJ Watt, as good of a year as he had and brought in his first Defensive Player of the Year award, he did miss two full games, and he left the contest early in four others. And in those games, the Steelers did not perform well at all. And so his health is going to be key this year, dealt with a hip, knee, and a groin issue throughout the course of the season last year. And so that was something that hampered him a little bit. The Steelers also didn't realize, or at least we didn't. Maybe they had a better idea, but Stephon Tuitt was a big, big player for them, one of the cornerstones of their defense. He did not play at all last year after dealing with the tragic loss of his brother, and he ultimately ended up retiring shortly after the NFL draft this year. So that's another one. And Tyson Alulu, who was their starting nose tackle, he missed all but 15 games last year. And so he rarely played for the Steelers last year. And so I think the collection of those things made it so their run defense was certainly less than ideal. Their linebackers also struggled last year. They made a move. They got Miles Jack in there. And so the front seven looks pretty beefed up right now on paper. Their interior defensive line depth looks really strong. And so I can't see them having the same type of struggles against the run that they'd had last year.
Yeah, you're right. And it's just weird. It's just weird to see that defense with those numbers. But again, you painted kind of a clear picture of what happened in 2021. On the offensive side, Najee Harris, we were talking about the odds and like 25-1 for Pickens. Najee Harris to lead the NFL in rushing. He's 19-1. There is ninth. And there's guys like Elijah Mitchell that have shorter odds to lead the NFL in rushing, which confuses me. I'm curious, what's a realistic expectations for him?
Yeah, I mean, I think the expectations are pretty high. I mean, this is a guy that had 1,200 rushing yards as a rookie last year, almost 1,700 yards from scrimmage. And so could he lead the NFL in rushing? It's certainly not out of the realm of possibility at all. He was fairly close to doing so last year. But a couple other guys, though, are clear favorites like Jonathan Taylor. Now, a lot of this comes down to health. And so the running back that can stay the healthiest of that group might have the best chance. If there's a guy, if player like Jonathan Taylor, Nick Chubb, Derrick Henry, if those guys end up missing multiple games, then I can see a scenario where that ends up happening for Najee. The problem is going to be his offensive line, like it was last year. Najee only averaged 3.9 yards a carry. And so it doesn't matter if you give him 381 touches or whatever he had last year, which he led the NFL in total touches on offense, he still wasn't overly efficient with that usage. And so at this rate, it's only going to wear down. He needs to get some better help from his offensive line. And if he's able to do that, if he's able to get those efficiency numbers up just a little bit even, he can certainly be in contention for that title.
Let's end with a little Canadian content. Chase Claypool actually had more yards from scrimmage last year than he did as a rookie, but it just seemed like his rookie year, we were all more impressed, maybe because he had 9 touchdowns, only had 2. But I just wondering what, and not really what you expect, but actually we'll go with this one. Like, was 21 a disappointment? Like, I think a lot of people are like, oh, as a rookie, he's got 873. He'll get over 1,000 in his second year. Just your thoughts on Chase Claypool.
Yeah, I think if you look at it compared to his rookie year, then I think you can say that it's a disappointment. I don't think his play was as bad last year as some people think that it was. Like, he still averaged over 14 yards a catch. His efficiency numbers were right. It was right there with where they were the season before in terms of yards per reception, yards per target. So his efficiency didn't dip all that much. What really dipped down was the touchdowns. He had 11 total touchdowns, 9 receiving, 2 rushing as a rookie. And that number dipped way down last year. And I think just some of those plays were pretty sloppy. That connection with Ben and Claypool just really wasn't there down the field last year. And I think that hurt his efficiency as well. And we know that how much Ben struggled to throw the football beyond the 10-yard marker last year. And so just finding that connection and trying to fight through traffic, I don't think that helped Claypool's case a lot. Perhaps we'll have better luck with one of these younger quarterbacks stepping in this year, a guy like Mitch Trubisky. If he's willing to look down the field, I think in terms of efficiency at least, his numbers could pop back up a little bit this year. I don't know if I would expect a monster season from Claypool statistically, especially considering now that we do have George Pickens into the mix.
Yeah.
And Johnson's been a guy who's been really healthy throughout his career so far. And so assuming those guys are heavily involved too, I wouldn't expect that number to jump up much, but maybe it can stay relatively similar to what it's been the first 2 years.
Which is not bad at all. Tommy, the Steelers 7.5 win total, over under, where are you going?
Yeah, I got to pound the over on that. I mean, it's year after year, the Steelers seem to be underestimated, if you will. And it's not necessarily that I think that the Steelers have some superstar roster, but they do have a good head coach. They are a good organization, and they really just don't lose very often. Mike Tomlin started with the team as head coach in 2007. They have yet to have a losing season. And so my mind, this all along throughout this process, has wanted to say 8-8. We can't say 8-8 because we have a 17-game schedule now. And so I'm always saying 8-9 or 9-8. So if you're asking me the over-under that, for sure I would go over on the Steelers. There's certainly a chance that they could be a letdown post-Ben Roethlisberger and with all of the turnover they've had specifically on the offensive side of the football. But I think if you look at the roster as a whole, I think it actually improved on paper. Well, just a lot of it will come down to the quarterback play. If these guys are turning the ball over at a much higher rate, I can see a record that wasn't nearly as good as we saw last year. And they did win a lot of close games last year, so that certainly factors in as well. But I would push the over on that, and I would say the Steelers are going to get to at least 8 wins this year.
And by the way, as a Raptor fan, we're used to the media and Vegas underestimating the team, even though there's a good coach with a good roster and a good organization. I imagine if I throw out the question, the guy for people to target in their fantasy leagues, you kind of already mentioned it, George Pickens, who I imagine is going to probably slip or is going to not be on the minds of people getting ready for their fantasy draft.
Yeah, if you're looking for value, and some people are behind the eight ball right now, and they don't quite, if they're not caught up to the pick and type, that would be a good player to target in fantasy for sure. In terms of just overall production and mass, I mean, you're looking at Najee Harris is going to be a guy that he's going to hammer out points just week in and week out. He's a guy that's going to, again, I would probably expect him to lead the NFL in touches again this year. But in terms of value, Pickens is a good value pick. And I also think that Deontay Johnson, what we've seen from him over the last few years, heavily, heavily targeted. That could change as the quarterback changes this year. And perhaps Trubisky has a different preference. Maybe he spreads the ball out a lot more to his top three receivers than the one-sided market share that we saw with Ben over the last 2 years. But Deontay is a guy who you can count on for consistent points week in and week out as well.
You can check out his work at stillcurtain.com. And again, you can follow him on Twitter at Tommy, J-A-G-G-I. Tommy, thanks so much for joining the show today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely, absolutely. We continue. We're going to be doing this. Even though I'm going to be away Thursday and Friday, we are doing this between now and really close to the start of the season. Chris Horvath, what do we got tomorrow in terms of the NFL coverage?
We are going to start with the NFC North after just finishing with the AFC North. And I am just pulling up the name of our guest.
Oh, here. It's okay. No. Which team are we starting? We start with the Packers tomorrow?
No, tomorrow we have Lindsay Young, a writer for the Vikings.com. She's going to talk to us about the Vikings. And then on Friday, we have a guest that we've had on our show before, Peter Bukowski, to talk all things Packers.
Nice. So Thursday, but I'm not here. First question has to be, why does everyone hate Kirk Cousins? To me, it's one of my favorite things about the Minnesota Vikings. Everyone hates them. I kind of feel bad. I feel bad for Kirk Cousins, even though he gets paid a lot of money.
Yeah, he's too mid. He's too mid to hate for me. Like, I don't know.
I know. Yeah, but he is. All right, on the other side, Tim Kirkshen was on, who just went to the Hall of Fame as a media member, went to the Baseball Hall of Fame as a media member with ESPN. He was on First Up, brought up a really good point about the Toronto Blue Jays. We will hit on that in just a moment.
You like that? Yeah.
We'll do that right after Newstalk 1010 Traffic Update. Welcome back, everybody. This is Gameplay. I'm your host, Matthew Cause. Short segment here because we've got Evan Dunphy who won the bronze medal at the last Summer Games for speed walking and dominating the Commonwealth Games just recently. But just real quick on the Toronto Blue Jays, Tim Kurkjian was on First Up today just talking bigger picture about where the Blue Jays fit.
Look, the Yankees and Astros are better than the Blue Jays, period. However, this is baseball. The ultimate beauty of this sport is its unpredictability. We have wild card teams winning the World Series multiple times. This can't happen in the NBA where the number 8 seed ends up winning the NBA championship. It doesn't work that way, but it does in baseball. So if the Blue Jays can get in and get hot like the Braves did last year, like the Nationals did in 2019, I sure give the Blue Jays a chance to not only get to, well, to get to the World Series. However, they're going to have to play a whole lot better than they are right now, and they're going to have to fix some things, especially in their pitching.
And that is Baseball Hall of Famer Tim Kurkjian, and he's right. In the last 15 years, we've seen the Cardinals win 2 World Series. One going 83-78. That one still amazes me. Then in 11, the Cardinals won again, going 90-72. The Giants in 2014, with basically just Madison Bumgarner and everyone else, 88-74. The Braves last year also, they won just 88 games. They were lousy at the All-Star break. And all those teams won the World Series. So, yes, there's lots of opportunities for Toronto. At the same time, they've lost 2 now in a row to the Baltimore Orioles. And having Odor hit the game-winning 2-run home run in the 8th makes it even worse. Real quick here for our betting. This is how I see it, Chris. I can't bet Toronto at minus 156. I can't. I'll take Baltimore at plus 132. Jose Barrios is, you look at his career starts at on the road, it's lousy. 2-4, ERA of 7.5, WHIP 1.6 in 11 starts on the road. I'll take Baltimore. I'll take the over of 9 runs at minus 105. And I think I would bet Baltimore's team total of over 4 runs.
You know what? I'm going to diverge away from you here. I kind of feel like...
Go somewhere else.
I kind of feel like the Jays, that they're going to get back on track tonight. I mean, listen, it has not been super encouraging the last 2 days, but ultimately this is a team with a greater level of talent, and I believe that down the stretch here, they are going to start rounding into form. So I'm going to take the opposite approach. I'm going to go Jose Berrios, 5-plus Ks, and the Blue Jays to win. That is plus 185. Berrios has cleared that number in 5 of his last 6 starts, and he's facing an Orioles team that strikes out at a decent clip. I know his road numbers aren't great, but I just think he's too good not to get back on track at some point, and what better time than tonight? In fact, I want Jose Berrios to come out tonight. I want him to say this to the Baltimore Orioles.
Doesn't matter if you have one ass cheek and 3 toes, I will beat your ass.
So is that 5 times now we played Dan Campbell?
It is. It really is. Right. We're going to be cutting it close here. We got what?
We're going to be cutting it close.
22 minutes left.
Yeah, to play it at least 2 more times. We'll find out. Evan Dunphy is going to join us, Olympic medalist, world championship medalist as well in all things and in speed walking. He is going to join the show next. And this is going to be a fun conversation. This fascinating guy who's also trying to get into politics as well. That's coming up right after traffic. Welcome back, everybody. This is Gameplay, and I always love when we get to talk to different guests and interesting guests. So my next one certainly is that. Not only an incredibly accomplished speed walker, winning gold at the Commonwealth Games, setting a Canadian record in that, and then also winning bronze at Rio de Janeiro What a horrible intro. Evan Dunphy is joining us. Evan, thanks so much for being on the show. Go to his website, dunphywalks.com. I can't believe that just left my brain.
No worries. I was a Rio bronze medalist, but only for about 2 hours. I
was, yes, that's right. He was taken away. Yeah. Yes, so you're talking about Tokyo.
Technically not wrong, but yes, no, I brought home the bronze in Tokyo 5 years on.
Yes. Yeah. Let's start here with at the Commonwealth Games. I think it was in the 10,000 meter last Sunday. What is that feeling like when you just crossing that finish line?
It was incredible. We're used to the longer stuff. Me personally, my preference is that 50-kilometer race. But, you know, this was a 10-kilometer race. And it was on the track in the stadium. The stadium was packed, 25,000 people. It was unbelievable. You know, I'm aware that race walking doesn't draw crowds of 25,000 people regularly. So to get to experience that was just something I'll never forget.
Let's go back to what you said there, because I know it's been a big part of you talking about you're going to mourn the loss of the 50K, which, again, is what you won the bronze medal at the last Summer Games. What is it about the 50K that so appeals to you, and why'd they get rid of it?
To me, it really put the endure in endurance. It was so rawly on display in the 50K. You know, it was a race that really didn't start until 35 kilometers into it. And that last 15K, if you messed up a little bit of your fueling, if you messed up a little bit of your hydration, your cooling, any little mistake just magnified itself like crazy. And you could have, you know, a massive lead to completely evaporate. You know, for example, I was in fourth place with just a kilometer to go in Tokyo. And I was 22 seconds back of third place with that 1K to go, and was able to kick down, and wasn't until the last 100 meters of that 50K race that I moved into the bronze medal position. So that's what I loved about it, was that it was never over until you crossed the finish line. And unfortunately, the IOC didn't see the value of it. They didn't see that side of things, and they thought it was too long and wanted to get rid of it. And so, you know, I'll never get sick of defending the event and the value it has. And as a free event at the Olympics, you know, it allowed anyone to come out and watch and bring their family out and be inspired by the athletes. So definitely going to miss it, but it is what it is.
And what I'm going to say on the front end, I am not at all comparing. There is a lifetime between you and I. I've done a bunch of marathons, and this is more to everyone out there listening. There is something so cool about the finish line, whether it's a marathon, whether it's speed walking. I don't know what it is. I've gone and watched. I'm not even competing, and I'll get teared up near the end watching people cross the finish line. There's this energy there, isn't there?
Well, the great thing about marathons or about running or walking in general is that when you stand on that start line, you're all doing the same race. You know, when Eliud Kipchoge crosses the finish line in a world record of 2 hours and 1 minute for the marathon, and someone else comes across the finish line in 4 hours, they ran that exact same course. They were out there doing the exact same thing, covering the same distance. There's something really special about that. The finish line is just a place to go and hang out and just see people celebrating, achieving their goal. You know, my goal is to win Olympic medals and world championship medals and set world records maybe one day, but you know, it means no different to me than what somebody else's goal means to them. It might be a bit different objectively, but the process of trying to achieve it and the joy that comes with succeeding is exactly the same. So I think that's what gives that finish line feel, that really special environment.
Oh, absolutely. But by the way, I'm going to be the bad guy here for a second, because I know you are not that. But there is a difference in that feeling. My goal is to get under 3.5 hours. Your goal is to win medals. There is a difference, and it's impressive to watch. What, Evan, what do people not know about speed walking? You mentioned before about in the final, the final 15 kilometers of the 50K, that the tiniest mistake can cost you. What are things that people don't know about your sport?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is just there's a preconception that because it looks funny, then it must be easy. I think that's the biggest thing we have to battle. We know it looks funny. We're make no bones about it. I know what I look like when I'm out there doing it. But to convince people or to show people that it's actually still incredibly, incredibly physiologically demanding, that's the thing that I want to preach as much as I can. In the 10K race at Commonwealth Games, my average heart rate for that 38.5-minute race was 184 beats a minute. So, for anyone out there that goes on runs and knows what their heart rate, kind of does, imagine doing 38.5 minutes at an average heart rate of 184. And that's kind of what we're doing, just to give you a sense of the physiological demands of it. And then having to do that high physiological strain while also adhering to these rules, because race walking is essentially just running with rules. We're bound by having to have 1 foot on the ground at all times and having our front leg be straight at the knee. But other than that, the challenge on the heart and on the lungs is the exact same.
And I would say to everyone, go out and check out an event. And yes, you might think it looks goofy. I think you'll be impressed with the physicality of it if you're actually there, if you're there up close. Getting off of, and we'll get back to speed walking and just what's next for you. Again, joined by Evan Dunphy. And again, congrats winning the gold at the Commonwealth Games, setting records. And again, bronze medalist in the last Summer Olympics and nearly bronze back in Brazil. I'm curious about your goals politically.
Yeah. So getting ready for a new kind of race come October, running for city council. I'm trying to avoid the walking for city council puns for as long as I can, because I know
they will. Do your best. Do your best. That's going to be hard.
I've genuinely come down to, I've walked my city more than anybody else. And you get a really unique, different perspective seeing your city at 12, 13 kilometers an hour than you do at 40, 50 kilometers an hour. And I just think that Richmond, British Columbia, where it's home for me, is a city with amazing potential. And, you know, like I've striven for the last 20 years to find my own potential, I want to start working towards how we can, you know, have Richmond achieve its potential.
Okay, we're going to stay politically for a second, because I walk a lot in the city of Toronto, and I saw that on your Twitter account, you were walking around Richmond and just all the developments there. Do you have any thoughts on, to me, one of the biggest issues is always, wow, we're going down a weird route, but here we go. I never expected to go here. But I always get nervous for young people because the cost of rent and the cost of housing and just the cost of trying to live anywhere in a city is so crazy expensive. And I bring this up because on your Twitter account, you were going through like tens and tens, maybe even hundreds of pictures of developments and just how much, and these developments were hurting the ability for more people to live in cities. I don't know if you have any thoughts on this. This is a bizarre question, but is there anything that can be done to help with issues when it comes to things like rent?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we just need to be, first and foremost, is just building more diverse ranges of housing. I live I'm talking to you today from in a three-story apartment next to an elementary school, a community center, and a high school that would be illegal to build today. But it's a great place to, you know, for someone like myself, for young families to live. And we got to build more stuff like that, and we got to build more walkable communities. We got to allow people to be able to walk to get their groceries, or take a bike, or let kids walk to school. I mean, I certainly grew up walking to school every single day, and I think I'm better for it. So, you know, there's lots that can be done, and I'm excited to sort of throw those solutions out there. But maybe a sports radio show is not the ideal time to be talking about that sort of thing. I think some of your listeners are probably already confused having a race walker on.
And I know. It's my fault.
We're diving down other these holes. But I could talk for hours about this. So
I know.
Go follow me on Twitter, and you can get all my hot takes there.
Yeah. By the way, if we had more time, I would do so many follow-ups on this, because I think people listening, yeah, you're listening as a sports show, but these are issues that affect everyone. We don't have that time, so I have to end again, joined by Evan Dunphy. What is next for you? What is the next step for you after winning at the Commonwealth Games?
So I have another race in 10 days in the Bahamas. I'll be trying to retain my area title, so our NACAC, our North America, Central American, Caribbean title. So I won that 4 years ago in Toronto, and I'll be trying to retain that title in over a week's time. So, yeah, just got home, get some recovery in, see my physio, get a bit of training in, and then leave again for another race in a couple of days. So it's pretty relentless, but I've definitely taken some time to celebrate this Commonwealth win.
Where did you say it was? The Dominican? Where was the race?
In the Bahamas, yeah, in Nassau.
In the Bahamas. Bahamas in August. Doing speed walking. That is going to be, I mean, that right stuff should tell people just the physicality and the endurance required. You couldn't have waited and done this in November in shade. Instead, you're doing it there in August. That's going to be crazy.
It was 35 degrees in Tokyo when we raced, and our world champs in 2019 were in Doha, where it was 32 degrees, and we were racing at 11:30 at night.
Okay,
so,
good.
You know, we take on those hot conditions for sure.
Yep, I'm glad it's at night, not at noon. All right, well, listen, I wish you all the best. Stay healthy, stay hydrated. I'd love to get you back on again where we do 20% sports and 80% zoning.
For sure, anytime. Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. Follow the man on Twitter, at Evan Dunphy. Go to the website, dunphywalks.com. This is a really interesting dude doing good stuff for Canada. All right, we got to take – oh, I could have gone on so much longer. And producer Chris,
yeah.
Were you nervous that I was going to try to do about 7 more minutes of politics with Evan? Because I was so tempted.
I mean, hey, it's a fine line. I'm sure that there's some listeners who care not to hear it. But hey, Evan's a really impressive guy, you know? And yeah. Anytime you can win a gold medal in any event and then also have separate interests in politics, seems like he's a really well-rounded guy. And he also seems like he has the type of attitude where anything he approaches, he says,
doesn't matter if you have one ass cheek and three toes, I will beat your ass.
We got to try to do that 2 more times. That was awkwardly way of you shoving that in. It made no sense, but I still appreciate it. Sound of the day coming up right after traffic. Welcome back, everybody. This is Gameplay. I'm your host, Matthew Kaas, and in just a couple hours, FanDuel. I'll mention them in a second. The World Juniors, Latvia versus Canada, 5:30 pregame, puck drop at 6 o'clock. Speaking of FanDuel, I have got the over for Latvia versus Canada. I got a $38.08 bet on the over of 8.5 goals. That'll pay me $36. Connor Bedard is back. There's a lot of talent on the ice. It should be sloppy, which means it should be fun with lots and lots of goals. Looking forward to that game. The World Juniors in August. I'm here for it. I'm here for as much content as you want to give me. All right, it's time now for Sound of the Day.
Sound of the Day, Sound of the Day. Here comes the sound of the day.
And Sound of the Day is all about Hard Knocks, all about the Detroit Lions. Let's first start. We thought we had the over-under set at 7.5 for the amount of times we would play Dan Campbell saying this odd thing.
Doesn't matter if you have one ass cheek and three toes, I will beat your ass.
I believe he would beat their ass, because if you have three toes, I think that puts you at a physical mismatch. Never fire Dan Campbell. That man is gold. Sticking with gold, let's hear Adrian Hutchinson, the rookie, the number 2 overall pick for the Lions, getting the entire team pumped up with a little Billie Jean.
She told me her name's Billie Jean. Across the scene, every head turned and eyes dream. People always told me,
everyone is going to be betting the over on the Lions. They are now everyone's favorite team. Gameplay on TSN 1050 was brought to you by FanDuel. What a great set. That was a great clip. Good job by Hutchinson. Make every moment more and get your winnings fast when you download the FanDuel Sportsbook app today. Overdrive is coming up with Brian Hayes and Frankie Corrado. We are just on the under of 7.5 times that we played Dan Campbell. Let's end the show in style and get to traffic.
Doesn't matter if you have one ass cheek and three toes, I will beat your ass.